Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmental and socially responsible investing alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill. These programs feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus, and deep dive discussions with notable people in the industry. This time the topic, it's all about the water. Also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. Water. It's something a lot of us take for granted, but the availability of clean, usable water has become a growing concern around the world. So what does the future hold, and what about investment opportunities and risks when it comes to water? We have two guests to talk about that today. Betsy Mosetter, Chief Operating Officer of Green Alpha Advisors, which has been focusing on sustainability-oriented investing since 2007, and Paul Ellis, Head of Paul Ellis Consulting and a nationally recognized expert on sustainable investing and host of the Sustainable Finance Podcast, as well as being a consultant for this podcast and the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. Betsy, can you talk a little bit about what you see as the global water challenges that we're facing?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Unfortunately, it's a very big topic and complex and deep. I'll start by summarizing a handful of years ago, Fidelity published a paper titled Water: Structural Demand Growth Creates Investing Opportunities. And here's a direct quote from the report talking about the investor side of things that's creating the opportunities. And then I'll sort of pivot a little bit to the demand and like, well, why is it such a big investing opportunity? Why are we here today? The quote being, while the concept of peak oil has been debated for decades, peak water is now receiving more attention as limits on global water supply become more challenging. Water is fundamental not just to the health of the Earth's ecosystem, but also to the health of global economic activity. Unlike oil, there are no alternative sources for many of the industrial uses of water. Some 2.2 billion people around the world do not have safely managed drinking water services. 4.2 billion people don't have safely managed sanitation services, and a full 3 billion lack basic hand washing facilities. Well, those are like really big numbers. It's hard, at least for my brain, to think in the billions. Something that's really small and easy to get my brain around personally is the fact that in the U.S. alone, fully 1 in 6 gallons of all the fresh water we produce is wasted through old, leaky, deteriorating infrastructure. That equates to 6 billion gallons of water a day that's completely wasted before it can be consumed or put into any productive use. And lastly, I'll add that in the U.S., we simply make terrible agriculture decisions when it comes to water sources, water efficiency. You simply have to look at the fact that almonds are extremely water intensive, and about 80% of the world's supply of almonds are produced in the very chronically drought-ridden parts of California. If that doesn't create problems, I don't know what does.
Paul, maybe you can talk a little bit then too about the agricultural issue and the use of water.
Yes. Well, as Betsy said, agricultural water use in the U.S. is very intensively focused on large-scale farming operations. And around the world, about 70% of clean water is dedicated to agriculture. What that means is that there's 3% left for all of the other uses for clean and fresh water. And that has to cover all of the human uses and all the other species on the planet and how they get their supply of fresh water. So when you add a rapidly growing human population, Pat, to the mix here, we're going to, in the next 20 years, have over 20 mega cities around the world that will have 10 million or more residents. And supplying fresh water to people in those cities for consumption, for hygiene, and infrastructure development is already creating stress in some major cities. And if you look at Sao Paulo, that's one of the places. Other cities around the world are already experiencing highly stressful water need and supply. In fact, Bloomberg ran a story about the fact that in California, many mid-sized farms are now being reduced in terms of their water supply. And we already know that the Colorado River never, most of the water, practically none of the water, ever gets to its delta. All of it is consumed and used before it gets there. So these are just a couple of examples of why we're under such tremendous stress, as Betsy mentioned.
Does it seem, and this is a question for both of you, for Paul and Betsy, but does it seem that the water problems have only recently gotten this much attention as far as investing goes, as far as the whole problem surrounding a clean, useful water?
And it certainly is getting a lot of attention recently, not just in the investor public, but in the press in general, because as Paul called out some great examples there, there's some really acute problems all over the world, partly with our aging infrastructure that's falling apart here in the U.S., but in certain cities, and I won't call out one or two because honestly, there are far more than people like to acknowledge, where lead is infecting our water supplies, where there are other dangerous chemicals in our water supplies. And, you know, as climate change causes more frequent and larger, more severe storms, that is putting pressure on already really weakened infrastructure. So the news items out there about water are just sort of in our face. They're not new problems. It's just because it's sort of at the tipping point of, can we function? Do we actually, when we think we're consuming fresh water, are we really? Do we have enough water for the crops to grow the food we need? All of those things are just coming to such a critical head. And so, yes, the result is then that there are a ton of investor dollars chasing water-themed ETFs, asking about what kinds of water names are in diversified mutual funds, and so on, because every type of investor out there you could name is trying to figure out, well, how do I invest in and benefit from this big trend? We need better water infrastructure. We need investment in our underlying systems.
Okay, well, let's get to some of the kinds of investments. Betsy, there are so many categories here related to water. What kind of companies are you looking for when you do your research at Green Alpha?
Yeah, great question. We spend a lot of time researching what are the risks that could cause our society to stop thriving and, heaven forbid, just completely fall apart. Once we understand what those like broad risks are, we then continue our research seeking solutions. What are the products and services that might help us adapt to and mitigate those risks? And then we start looking for companies that are actually producing those solutions. So one of the big risks is, as we've already mentioned a few times, our water infrastructure is failing. It's deteriorating. We have chronically underinvested in it for many decades. The first really obvious solution, new, less leaky pipes that also aren't made of lead and other harmful materials that contaminate our water supply. So for Green Alpha, a next economy pipe manufacturer is going to have to also then have a strong emphasis on circular economy production. If you look at the various pipe manufacturers, pipe fitters, valve makers, it's really quite shocking to me how few of them include any recycled content in their production, how few of them use renewable energy in their manufacturing processes. Knowing heavy manufacturing takes a lot of energy, geez, and you have this really big roof, why isn't your roof covered in solar panels? Shocking to me. I was just going to mention a couple standout examples. Advanced drainage systems is, for something that is so basic, like plastic-related water infrastructure, they're quite a cool company. They are actually the second largest plastic recycling company in America. They turn more than 550 million pounds of plastic into critical water and sanitation infrastructure every year. That was last year's stat. Importantly, they are recycling plastics that are one-time consumer use products like shampoo and laundry bottles. They're very rigid. And so they're actually one of the only companies in the world that can do that type of recycling. And they do the recycling 100% themselves. They buy those bottles from your curbside pickup service providers, and they turn them into value-add water infrastructure. Last year, 66% of their revenues were derived from recycled products. And then Xylem is another standout. They're a designer, manufacturer, equipment, service provider for water and wastewater applications. They address the whole full cycle of water from collection, distribution, use of water, returning the water to the environment. They also have really audacious goals to quickly get to 100% of their operations being renewable energy powered. And so here's my advice for investors on the call. Look at your holdings lists, whether it's, I don't know, an S&P 500 ESG fund or something else. Is the portfolio manager picking stocks that fits your vision of what a more sustainable next economy might become? But I find that not many people look at the largest holdings lists, and you can really, really learn a lot.
Betsy, both you and Paul have been talking a lot about the infrastructure issues. Does the recent push for legislation for infrastructure, do you think that improves the outlook for investments in water conservation, efficient use of water, that sort of thing?
I'm going to give you a very wishy-washy probably answer, because honestly, it's too soon to tell. What we do know is that the nation has chronically underinvested in our water infrastructure, and the consequences of that pitiful infrastructure spending is now being made more acute by the scale and frequency of storms. In 2019, the total capital spending on water infrastructure at the combination of local, state, and federal levels was a mere $48 billion, while the investment needs that year totaled $129 billion. So in just 2019 alone, there's an $81 billion investment gap. We also know that the government's lack of investing in infrastructure, in some rare cases, is being compensated for by corporations. I'll give you one quick example. American Water Works, between 2020 and 2024, they're investing $8.2 billion in system improvements throughout their utility service areas. Because of the fact that the infrastructure is just so aging, they can't keep doing their job if they don't invest the money in it. You know, we don't really know how it's going to get spent, but it sort of doesn't matter how and where, which companies are going to benefit, because they all will benefit. We all will benefit from it.
Okay. We're talking with Betsy Mosetter, Chief Operating Officer of Green Alpha Advisors, and Paul Ellis, head of Paul Ellis Consulting and an expert on sustainable investing. He's also the host of the Sustainable Finance Podcast. Betsy and Paul, you were both talking about how much of our fresh water is dedicated to agriculture. I think you said 70% of the world's fresh water. That seems enormous. Are there investments related in that area that people can look to that would be involved in it, in agricultural water?
Sure, absolutely. There are a lot of companies creating, you know, if you think about how much infrastructure is needed to provide water to the agricultural world, there are quite a few companies that do. I'll be quite blunt. At Green Alpha right now, we don't have investments in any of those direct, obvious ones because we haven't found any that check all the right boxes, and we're not willing to do it in a watered down way. Only to use a really terrible pun there. So what I might challenge investors to think about is go up the value chain a little bit. If, I don't know, I can't find the right sprinkler manufacturer that is really the most efficient solution out there, what about those creating the demand for organic agriculture? Danone is what to me is sort of an obvious example of a really amazing demand creator for organic agriculture, efficient water use.
Danone, that's the big French-based food company that's also the parent of Danone North America, maker of Danone yogurt and other products.
Yes, they recognize that 89% of their entire water footprint is tied up in agricultural systems. So promoting a healthy, sustainable agricultural supply chain is obviously really key to their long-term success. If they aren't good stewards of the land and the water and everything they need to produce food, they can't produce food. And that is their whole reason for being. So they've developed collaborative approaches to ensure reliable management of water for agriculture production, constantly seeking out farmers who are willing to co-build water smart solutions and sustainable farming models with them. In addition, they work really hard to manage watersheds where they operate. And thirdly, they're all about circular use of water throughout their facilities. As one example, they are net zero water use use in their production facilities in India. In Mexico, they donate their clean water to third-party organizations. And throughout their operations in Belgium, they have systems in place that allow them to reuse a full 75% of water throughout all their operations. Think about the grocery stores where you can buy organic foods. Sprouts and NGVC, both publicly traded stocks that you can support with your investments, and obviously grocery stores where you can support their organic focus through your consumer decisions. There are huge demand drivers for organic farming that doesn't pollute our water supplies the way that chemical-laden farming does. And so, you know, you don't just have to think about, like, I don't know, pipe manufacturer or a sprinkler maker to think about how you can impact water in agriculture. You can go 1, 2, 3, 4 levels up the demand chain, the supply chain, to think about in a really value add way what's going to create demand for more efficient, more effective agricultural systems.
This question should go to both of you too, Paul and Betsy. How optimistic are you that, you know, we're making progress in ensuring that we'll have enough clean, usable water in the future? And what does that do for the economy and for investing?
I think the approach to solving water problems at the global scale requires three things. So the first is capital, obviously, in terms of how it applies at the sector level as well as the company level. The second is competence. And I think from Betsy's specific examples, you can see that there's a lot of different approaches to how water can be used and engineered and processed with great competence, depending on what the business is that the company is in. And the third is really willpower. What I've experienced as an advisor was that every one of my clients understood the value and the importance of water to them as consumers, to investment, to all different types of commercial uses long term. But I don't think many people 20 years ago were thinking about water shortage or water scarcity at the global scale. So what I like to do is apply several key performance indicators to measure what a company is doing or a portfolio in terms of its impact. The first one is how much water is being delivered to how many more people by portfolio companies, assuming that's the business that they're in a given year. The second one is how much more wastewater is being treated to prevent ecosystem destruction in a given year. And the third one is how much renewable energy, and Betsy's already mentioned this one, is being used by portfolio companies to deliver and or treat each cubic meter of water in a given year. And all of those are metrics that most companies keep track of these days because they're learning faster all the time that the cost of their water supply goes up, even when they're doing it well.
Okay. And Betsy, what's your take on all of that?
That is a great answer from Paul. You know, our government has been the real laggard in investing in the infrastructure that our tax dollars should be supporting. So in light of that, corporate America has sort of picked up the mantle and is doing what it can. And I'm very optimistic about what we're all capable of, government and corporations and people alike. It needs to be more of a united effort. So that makes me hesitant in my optimism. Many companies at the company level, yes, I can see following some of the types of metrics that Paul describes are doing great things that are cause for optimism. How efficiently and effectively we can use and produce and transport water is awesome. Those systems actually being put in place and being more widely used throughout our country and the globe in general, that's something we're not doing quite yet. We're totally capable of it. It just hasn't been made a priority by our government or basically any other in the world. And so that's the really piece that's missing, that the government step up and say, like, oh, yeah, right. Everybody in Nigeria being afraid to drink the water or even brush their teeth with water. Therefore, everybody has to buy bottled water and throw their bottles on the side of the road as they drive. Like, maybe that's not good enough and I should invest in a solution to that.
But you both seem to agree that water-related stocks and other investments are overall a good bet for investors.
I certainly believe that they are, Pat. It seems to me that this is a problem that, unfortunately, as we've been discussing, is only going to accelerate in terms of its scope as the human population and concentration of it in big cities grows around the globe. And at the same time, we really need that government regulatory infrastructure. I'd say it's as important, or maybe even more important, related to water regulation than it is carbon regulation today.
And Betsy, your thoughts on water-related investments being a good bet for investors?
Yeah, water-related investments, clearly critical, and there's not a lot of them. So there's a lot of investor dollars following them. There's a lot of momentum behind them. My only caution that I will add is you can't just, knowing that this is my very strong bias, we're long-term stock pickers. You can't just indiscriminately buy a water ETF or, a water-themed mutual fund and just assume it's going to be good. Whether you're picking a stock or picking a basket of stocks, you still need to do your homework and not just assume like water across the board. Check. Yes, that's of course going to be great over the long term. You may benefit over the short term just because there's so much money chasing the theme, chasing the sector in general right now. But over the long term, it doesn't matter whether you're picking a solar panel manufacturer or a water infrastructure play. See how the companies actually run. What are they producing? Are they investing in their capacity and their research and development to keep growing? Still got to do your homework.
Well, that's a good suggestion, Betsy. It just shows that the investor also has some responsibility in all of this and can't just take everybody's word for it. Where can people find out more about you and about Green Alpha Advisors?
Pretty easy. Our website's greenalphaadvisors.com. Anybody is more than welcome to email me directly. I'm Betsy, just Betsy at greenalphaadvisors.com. Or you can simply look up our mutual fund. That's the easiest way to get at our investments, the Shelton Green Alpha Fund, ticker NEXTX.
Okay. And Paul, would you like to toss in another plug here for your own podcast?
Yes. Thank you very much, Pat. I produce the Sustainable Finance Podcast, and I also am a member of the team that puts together this incredible digest on a monthly basis in connection with Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. People can reach me at paul@paulellisconsulting.com, and you can find a link to my podcast, the Sustainable Finance Podcast, at that website on the opening page.
Okay, terrific. Thanks both, Paul and Betsy, for being with us today.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it and had a great time.
We've been talking with Betsy Mosetter, Chief Operating Officer of Green Alpha Advisors, which has been focusing on sustainability-oriented investing since 2007, and Paul Ellis, Head of Paul Ellis Consulting and a nationally recognized expert on sustainable investing and host of the Sustainable Finance Podcast, as well as being a consultant on this podcast and the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. You can register to receive the Socially Inspired Investor Digest and podcast. There's no fee. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus and another deep dive discussion and companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer-friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.